Today on the Orville Universe Podcast, we are talking about Season 1, Episode 6 of The Orville, The Krill. We learn about the Krill, we learn about their religion, and we learn that there truly is nothing that Bordas can't eat.
All that right after this. Welcome to the Orville Universe Podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
I'm Matthew Westfox.
Good day, Mr. Westfox.
How are we doing today?
Good, man, good. Been off doing singing telegrams.
Yeah, it sounds like a kind of fun gig.
It is a fun gig. It's weird, but I really like it. it's a business I started a while back, and it's just kind of, it's fun because it's just a happy thing. Like, no one's sad to get... Okay, there's been a few people that were sad to get singing telegrams, but that's mostly embarrassment. And in those cases, I think most of the time, the people who sent them were intending to embarrass their friends or whatever.
Okay.
So other than that, though, it's mostly just like, I'm making people cry because they're so happy to get a thing. You know, it's fun.
You know, I'm suddenly thinking Malloy would be sending a lot of singing telegrams if he could.
Yeah. Oh, man. This episode, Malloy had one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, which one was that?
By far, actually. But before we even get into the recap, I'm just going to say my favorite line, which was they're talking about the colony being bombed, and Kelly says, there's families on that colony. And Malloy says, there's probably a lot of single people, too.
I loved that because it was both hilariously funny, and it was also such a good tweak of the, like, you know, everyone always says, oh my gosh, there's families down there. There's women and children down there. We have to save them. And I get the reason why, but it's also based in a lot of kind of stupid ideology.
Yeah.
And so Malloy just being like, all people down there are kind of worthy of saving. You're right. I didn't even thought about that, but it was a great line and also hilarious.
Well, what's great about that line too, and I wasn't going to get into this yet, but it also ties into the plot of the episode. With some of the decisions made are based on that exact ideology you're talking about. And so I think that was intentional. I think that was an intentional, like, nod to the fact that some of the decisions they make later are part of that same thing. Let's get into the recap real quick, just because we need to get there. This is a fun little episode about the Krill. We learn about the Krill and their culture for the first time, really, and kind of flesh them out. A little world building happens. But it's also a really fun adventure episode. Our crew sees a planet being bombed, and even though they don't have the fight, it's a much bigger ship. They go in, they fight for their lives, and through some clever work on Ed's captaining and some good flying by Malloy, they win the battle and destroy the ship, but a shuttle is left. And therefore, Union High Command says that Ed has to go to a Krill ship. They use holographic technology given to them by Isaac to disguise themselves as Krill and go basically live on a Krill ship for a seems like maybe a couple of days, and they really get to, and they're supposed to examine the culture of the Krill to try to bring peace between the Krill and the Union. But in the process, they find out there's a bomb that is a continent-destroying bomb that they're heading toward an outpost with, so they decide they need to destroy the Krill ship. But then they learn there are children on board, and then they feel they can't kill the children. So they go about a plan to save the children, but killing all of the other Krill, and they do that. And they last second save the colony, killing all the Krill, and their mission of peace is now turned into a mission of destruction. And it's a pretty poignant and fun and interesting episode. I dug it.
Yeah, and I would just add one thing I think is very important for the recap, because it's going to come up a lot in our discussion, is... And I think the very last scene, Ed goes to the female Krill who he had kind of had almost a little bit of a flirtation with. Certainly a connection had been built, and they, all the students were her students, and he had saved her along with them, kind of thinking that he can make sort of a bridge of some kind of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes it very clear that in her mind, he has just declared war, and she hates him as much as any Krill ever has. And that ending was just such a... It was such a change to the trope that you expected that I thought it was really significant. I think we're definitely going to talk about it some.
Yeah, for sure. And I what I really liked about, and not just her, she makes that point that, you know, she considers it war, but also she talks about the children, and he says, we wouldn't hurt the children. They're not our enemies. And she said, after what they just saw you do, they will be.
Right.
That was like bone chilling. Again, this show just kind of punching above its weight into what I was expecting from this show. I expected it to be a lot more comedy, and they're talking about the cultural effects that war has on the children of people you're warring against.
Yeah. Let's hold off on that, because I think it's one of the issues we're definitely going to talk about. But in terms of general thoughts, I know you said you really liked this episode, you thought it was funny, and also so hard-hitting. I'm definitely with you there. The humor was, again, a little bit cringeworthy, and just like, okay, their god is named Avis, and so that's the same name as a car rental company. I liked that joke the first time. By the fifth time they make a play on that joke, it was getting a little old.
Yeah, I can see that, but I like Malloy has such a good delivery, and they did change the joke enough each time to where I really enjoyed it. I really liked when he's like... we're praying to Avis because their lie is their ship was destroyed and they had to come back in the shuttle, and he says something about we're praying to Avis that he will cover the loss of our vehicle. Like, there's a lot of little fun Avis jokes in there.
Yeah,
he says something about the humans, they worship Hertz. I don't know, like it's silly, but that was actually some of the humor I enjoyed.
I get that, and I will say one thing I did like is that in the world of the Union, the Federation stand-in, you know, a lot of people are fairly off the cuff. You know, not just the humans, but the aliens. They talk in what we think of as today is kind of informal, you know, bantery language. The Krill very much do not. I've often thought that there's a sort of a cultural clash that would happen that's not explored when just people's basic, like, modes of speaking are going to be so different.
Right.
And they name that. They make clear that, like, one of the first things that triggers the Krill realizing these people are not really Krill is that kind of off-the-cuff banter kind of humor that the two humans are using. And so I like that as just one more, like... Yeah, let's look at how these cultures would really be different.
Does it, though? I don't remember them anyone ever actually calling them out on it. The one guy is suspicious of them, but he never says why exactly.
Yeah, I noticed it specifically. It's when Malloy makes it. There's one time where Malloy makes one of his first jokes, and they immediately cut to the priest looking very suspicious.
Okay.
But I definitely think you're right. It's never officially called out, but certainly that was the impression I got.
Gotcha.
Was that it was being led in that direction.
I definitely see it. And the entire time I'm watching the episode, I was like, they're going to get busted. And that's the kind of the joke between them. Ed keeps looking at Malloy and going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But he goes in that whole long diatribe about getting to see your coworkers not in their regular clothes.
Mm-hmm.
When he's going to a ceremony for Avis. And he's like, you get a chance of their style. And I was like, this is clearly going to get them busted. But then the big high commander guy just says, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, that part was a lot of fun. So let's start talking about some of the basic issues. So one of the things that jumped out to me, and my sense from a little chat beforehand, is that you might not even see it the same way that I do. But, you know, once again, we're going to compare this to Star Trek, because I think it's very clearly a... Star Trek has so established so many of the tropes that this show is playing with that I think it's impossible to look at it without thinking about that, and this show is very clearly trying to play on those tropes.
For sure.
But one of the things that I think Star Trek established fairly often, not all the time, but that is this kind of mission of you have an enemy, learn more about your enemy, learn more about why the enemy thinks the way you do, that will allow you to use the enemy's logic to help them see that this war is pointless and that you're not actually that different and that you should all get along. And that doesn't come up all the time. It certainly doesn't work with the Cardassians or the Borg. But especially with more of kind of the one-off aliens that they meet, that seemed like a very common trope. And it's a trope that makes a lot of sense, but also sometimes I feel like doesn't really click. And so to have it so clearly not be the case here, to have them go on a mission that is aimed at subterfuge for the purpose of understanding and for the purpose of better knowing them, and then have it quite literally almost blow up in their faces to the point where they have to abandon their mission and just say, it's too late. We can't we can't try to make them understand. We have to fight, even if that means that understanding is going to be even further away. I found that really poignant, both for like the current political movement we're in, but also just in general as like an interesting play on that trope.
Yeah, I think so too. I really liked in general, you got this villain, which is just a villain as far as we know it so far. They're this race that is, you know, xenophobic and superior, or like they have Krill superiority complex going on over there, and they just they're trying to kill everything that's not Krill. They believe all the resources are theirs. At one point, Kelly compares it to the way people of our centuries think of animals. Animals and plants are just for our use, as she says. And so the Krill think of us that way. We're just, you know, beings to be conquered or used how they see fit. I really liked how the main characters did not immediately go, like, how are we going to kill them? And Ed's immediate thing was, hey, we're gonna take this ship apart and figure out what their weaknesses are, right? And they're like, no, we're going to try to figure out their culture and try to understand them. I loved that. I know that's a trope, but as you said, but like I liked that these guys are trying to do the right thing. So they're trying to make peace with their enemies when possible.
Mm-hmm.
But then their enemies cross the line of genocide that they can't, you know, allow to happen, and then they have to fight.
Right, and I think that last point is something that you didn't see happen very often. And so it happens sometimes, but and especially in later Star Trek, but you didn't see happen very often. And I think is a. You know, I think it's a very relevant point in today's world. And I don't know at what point, you know, Seth MacFarlane was making that and if they were thinking about it in those terms, but certainly just the idea of, you know, that this can be in any field. This can be when you are talking to someone at the office about a disagreement you're having, you know. I'm not saying blow them up in the office, but like just that at some point we're conditioned to think, I think, that reason and logic and understanding will always fix every problem. And I think that most of the time that's very good advice, and most of the time they will. But sometimes you're just up against someone who is not going to be changed, and you have to decide either to fight about it if you have to, or walk away from the situation, or whatever it is. But because you just recognize that sometimes that path of reason and understanding isn't always going to work.
Yeah, it's another example of this show allowing the main characters to fail, which I always really like, because we're so conditioned in so much sci-fi and so much genre fiction in general. The good guys are going to win. They're going to accomplish their goal. And in this show, we've already had multiple episodes that they don't accomplish their goal, and it's about how to kind of still live up to your standards of right and wrong and still do the things that display your character even when you lose.
Yeah.
And that all things aren't solvable between people. Sometimes people disagree and you have to come to blows over it. And that's awful. You should try to resist it, but there's got to be a line, you know.
Not to get too political, but to frame it in a way that I think most people can agree with. Like, to me, when I watch this, the thing that I immediately think of is, you know, those folks who are looking at the rise of neo-Nazism and things like that and saying, no, we need to, like, talk and reason. And again, not to go too far into that particular debate, but I think that's to me the kind of thing that this is pointing to. You know, it's not, I don't want any listeners to think Matt and I are out there saying, yeah, if you disagree with someone, if someone doesn't like the Orville, punch them in the nose. Of course not.
Right.
But just that there are, though, you know, that even in our own world today, there are going to be disagreements that exist that are not just about light things, that are about life and death. And I used to really very firmly believe that, like, reason and understanding would work with everyone, and that there were people who, if I could just make them sit down and listen to me or listen to someone smarter than me, that they would come to understand things the way I would. And I've come to realize that it's both kind of a naive perspective and also a very pretentious one in a weird way. You know, and that sometimes just maybe because it's I'm wrong, or maybe because just someone else just isn't going to see it, but it's just not always going to happen.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm really learning in my last couple of years of philosophy that we all are struggling with all the time, at least I think we should be. Okay, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm addicted to philosophizing, but really, people are just different, and I think the art of living on this world together is figuring out how to live together when we're as different as we are sometimes.
Right.
And it's not to completely disregard what the other side is saying, no matter who they are, even if they are the Krill who's trying to murder everyone else. And I think the next point we're going to talk about is religion, I believe. And yep. I getting into that a little bit, I actually don't think the Krill, they are obviously, religion is there. This reminds me a little bit of what we talked about a girl, the second or third episode. And on its face, it seems like that episode's about trans issues, but really it's about cultural colonialism, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this episode, the obvious thing is that it's about religion, but I actually don't think religion is the problem here. It's racism. It's like racism draped in religion, which happens today. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, it's happened all over the, you know, the centuries. But it's not the problem isn't that these people worship Avis. They can worship Avis all they want. The problem is their religion is telling them that they are more valuable than other beings. And that's the problem. The Krill are racists. Their culture is designed, and like it is indelible in their culture that they are to be racist toward all other beings.
There's a great quote. I think it's by Marcus Borg. I'm not sure. It's by some theologian in the last century. Maybe someone can correct me, and I'm probably going to misstate the quote as well, but it basically says, like, the search for Jesus or the search for God is looking into a mirror. The point being that very often people will make a God out of their own fears or hopes or dreams and attitudes, and that quite often the God they create is a God of, you know, their own, prejudices,
yeah.
You know, and that to me, and religion becomes a way to justify the people who you already want to hate.
Just in general, the person you want to be, the actions you want to take. When I was, I grew up in the Christian faith, really, really strongly. My dad was a pastor, and one of the things that we were always taught was that when people stop being Christians, they're being dragged away by their own desires and enticed.
Mm-hmm.
And as I get older, I think that's just how everyone works all the time. Like, you have desires and you're building up, to some degree, you're building up philosophical systems to allow you to operate the way you want to operate, and hopefully they're moral ones that don't step on other people's freedoms,
yep,
and rights. But you know, sometimes they are, and people build systems like the Krill. I can imagine a war in the Krill's history where they had a war and they had to exterminate people, and maybe they had to learn to build this sort of like lack of empathy into their children because they had to win this war for their own survival, and then they had to come up with this god called Avis, or maybe they had a god called Avis that sort of became this avenging god in their minds because they needed to be able to win whatever fights they were in, you know?
Right.
That's kind of unrelated. I don't know.
No, I think that's a very good point. So it's funny, on Superhero Ethics, the podcast that I run, that Matt's been a guest on, we talk a lot about villains, and we often talk a lot about the difference between what we refer to as a mustache twirling villain, which is just the one who's like, ha ha ha, I'm so evil. I want to have power. I want to kill people.
One you cannot relate to.
Yeah, versus the one who, like, has a point, you know, like Magneto in the X-Men, where you're like, okay, I'm not really on board with your methods, but I understand where you're coming from, and I understand why you think you're the good guy.
Yeah.
And often, on a show like this, I want the villain to be someone who is much more like that. And in a way, this show is not, I mean, basically what they're telling us is that God is telling the Krill to twirl their mustaches. That's it. They're still very mustache twirly, just with a little religion behind it. And I like what you were just saying, because like, I think you can headcanon 8 different ways of trying to understand why are they like that. You know, is it because they've just, they're, you know, they, grew up, you know, their culture was created without any contact with others, and it has a superiority complex that an awful lot of other cultures, you know, have developed in similar circumstances. Is it because of some kind of fight for survival, like you're saying? There's so many reasons for it. And a part of me hopes that later in the show, we'll get to explore that more. Like, I'd love to see some more depth to the krill.
Yeah, I really hope so.
What I like is that what happens is that Ed and Malloy realize they don't know that, and they don't care. Because what they now know enough to know, and this is kind of tying back to that first argument discussion we were having, because you were saying, you know, that it's still always important to understand and to try and figure out where people are coming from. And I agree with you up to a point, but I think there's also a point where you think, okay, what they believe makes them want to kill all of us. And I would at some point love to learn more about that, but right now they're trying to kill all of us, and that's just what matters is trying to stop it. And I kind of like that there wasn't a push. You know, there was never a moment where Edgar Malloy said, wait, but why does the religion say that? How can we figure this out? They came to realize this is a religiously based crusade, and undoing that is going to take a huge amount of work, and they got to win the war first.
Yeah. And I mean, in this situation, it came down to something I liked about this episode a lot is the way they structured the reveals. First, the reveal of the krill ship and the ability to go, and then the reveal of the weapon, and then the reveal of the children. And it all kind of put their decisions in different moral context. And I, you know, this one just came down to a practical thing. Like, we can kill a
right.
ship full of krill or let hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions of people die. And I don't think anyone would argue with that decision. But then you come to the question, how do the children complicate the issue? They seem to think so. That the children are innocents, I guess, is what they would say. I'm inferring something by saying that, but the children are innocents, and they're not their enemies, as he says, so they're not going to kill a bunch of children.
Right.
That assumes these children have value, but they're just part of the same system that these other krill are. They're just at an earlier place on that system.
Yeah, it was something I had real trouble with, because, first of all, I think you're right. We had as a point to discuss their decision to blow up the ship, but on some level I think you're right. Like, that's just what you decide to do in the situation. I don't think there was... You can explore if there were... Like, if the technicalities of the situation offer you alternatives, maybe you can explore them. But, you know, if the show sets up, like, they can't disable the weapon, this is the only thing they can do, I think that's a difficult moral choice, but I also think it's a pretty clear one. But related to that, I think their decision to save the kids, and especially to save the one krill who they've made a connection with, I thought was really morally interesting, because the logic of kids don't know yet, kids are innocent, kids should be protected, on some level I 100% agree with that, and I believe that. And I still think they're probably right to save the kids, but I also think, again, there's kind of a naivete of, we're going to do that because we can save the kids, because the kids haven't been taught yet. And as the woman who they meet says, we talked about at the very beginning, as you brought up, I think that's a kind of naive idea, you know, because there's a possibility the kids could be taught differently, but there's also just as much chance that they've made these kids hate them all the more. And
yeah.
I don't think that's a reason not to do it, but I think it's a nice take on, again, the idealism that's often behind this.
Well, I think his goal, and I think it's one that may pay off in the long run. We'll see. I think his goal is to create an act of kindness. When they're in the classroom, one of the children asks, do they have souls? He says, and she says, of course not. I forget the question they ask, but they ask some question about humans doing a good thing, and they're like, no, of course not, they don't have souls, these beings can't be moral. And I think he thinks by saving the kids, he is going to show the grace of humanity,
right,
and show his soul to her at least, and hopefully these kids, by saving them. But then the point she makes at the end is like, no, you didn't do that at all, you just killed all of their families right in front of them. And
right.
It's so devastating. That moment is devastating to me, because that's If this were a worse show, that would be the end of this episode. She would be a convert. She would be someone at the end of the episode who says, you know, you're right. I see now that you saved me and you saved these children and that you must have a soul. But at the end, she is madder than ever and more resolute in her faith to Avis. There are two points in this episode where two different people talk about doubt of Avis, which I thought was interesting. One of the children asks, he asks if they have souls. And she says, of course not. I think that's a moment of empathy on, I think it's Jaka is the kid's name. I think it was a moment of empathy on Jaka's part where he's like, but how do they not have souls? Like they seem, he says, how do they pilot ships and how do they do this and that? And she says, well, computers can talk and computers can pilot ships.
Right.
And I thought that was, it's like, no, we're special. They're not. And she's just indoctrinating, but apparently he has this young child has the empathy that he's still questioning. And then she says that, after her brother's death, after that ship is destroyed and her brother's death, her faith is renewed, which made me think maybe she had some doubts before.
Mm-hmm.
And that after her brother's death, she's like finding herself with a new renewed faith in Avis. And that's kind of terrifying, but it's also interesting. It's interesting that even in this first real episode where we examine the Krill, they do expose two of them having like weaknesses of the faith.
Yeah. No, I think you're making a really good point there. And one thing in particular that I really latched on to, because you're right, that's what I was saying about playing with the trope at the beginning. The way that they don't do what would normally be done of having them all convert, I thought was so powerful.
Yeah, me too.
Especially because, and I think this is something you and I have talked about on a couple of our different podcasts, one thing that like writers will often do is they will basically distinguish who is it okay to kill and like who has a higher place in a moral spectrum based on how easy it is to relate to them. You know, mm-hmm. If you want to make a alien evil and terrible and very killable, make them look completely alien. If you want them to look relatable, then make them look more like you. You know, and like some great shows really play with this, like Captain Marvel does a great movie. Captain Marvel does a great job of like twisting this on its head, but it's still a very common trope. And related to that also is that, you know, when you have the nameless, faceless Krill, who don't, they're just, you know, a horde of people who all want to kill you, they're all easy to write off as evil.
Mm-hmm.
But when you make a connection with someone, now this person has a name, now this person has a brother, now this person has hopes and dreams and ideas, now it's much harder to hate them. It's much harder to see them as just the evil Krill. You can relate to them. And so I love that the show let us do that. It let us relate to a member of the Krill. It let us see beyond that just nameless thing. And then showed us she's just as genocidal as the rest of them, if not now even more so.
Yeah.
And you're right, that gave me chills because it was like, oh yeah, this is not as easy as I want to think it is. This is a complex problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like what they do with this show, and I like how they never make it easy on Ed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They always make it difficult on Ed. These decisions are never cut and dry. And when it seems so cut and dry, the show allows it to go a different way. And I really respect that a lot.
Yep.
We kind of already left the religion aspect. But what did you think of the idea that most technological species leave faith behind?
So I wrestled with that a little bit, and that's an issue that's definitely going to come up when we get to the last episode of this season, which I actually think puts it on its head a little bit in a way that I really like. I think that's a very common conceit, and I think certainly we're seeing a degree of it in our own world, and that a lot of what's happening is, or at least certainly a fear of it, and that in our own world, there's a lot of a push of, you know, with science, we don't need religion anymore. And then a lot of fundamentalism is actually, I mean, the original fundamentalists were very much a response to Darwin and to that sort of part of the scientific development, because they thought this was going to be the end of religion. And they were like, no, we have to fight for religion. And I think that tension is not actually real? Like, I because what I also see at the same time is, outside of the fundamentalists, which every religion has, also a number of people of other religions who are adapting to what does religion look like in a scientific world. You know, Einstein thought of himself very much as a Jew and wrote a lot about his Judaism in relation to the things he was learning about the universe. So I think religion will fundamentally change as cultures technologically develop, but I think, again, going back to the trope, you know, Star Trek was written by an atheist who very much believed that technology would eventually wipe out the need for religion. And I get why he was, and that kind of established the trope, but I think DS9, for example, was one great example of showing that that doesn't have to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I think the same thing is true here, that, like, religion might change drastically as we encounter aliens, as we encounter different technologies, but I don't think it goes away entirely.
By the way, I keep meaning, we keep coming across this topic, and I keep meaning to mention it to you, and I keep meaning to do it off mic, but because it's not about this show, but I'm going to mention it now because I keep forgetting. Have you seen season 2 of Discovery yet?
No, I have not. I and I guess related to this, I really did not like Discovery.
Right.
Because I wanted a Star Trek show, and it just does not feel like a Star Trek show to me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's very much less episodic, and there's definitely some darker tones and things, and I think it explains some of that. But in the second season, they bring on Pike as a main character.
Uh-huh.
Captain Pike, the original Captain of the Enterprise, and he's religious. And
interesting.
I found that fascinating. A lot of the first half of season 2 of Discovery is them discussing, like, what religion means in the face of all the things they're seeing. Because Spock is also in season 2, and Spock is not religious, and neither is Burnham, the main character, and they kind of bristle up against Pike's mm-hmm. sort of openness, at least openness to religion, if not just... It seems like he has religion, but he's kind of keeps it to himself to some degree.
I may well go back and watch it at some point. It does tie into this show very much, because for me the chain of events was I had been missing Star Trek. I'd been wanting to have a new Star Trek show. Discovery came along and I got incredibly excited and I thought, wow, we're going to have a new Star Trek show. And then I got very disappointed because I wanted a Star Trek show. And then when someone said, oh, if you want that, watch The Orville.
Mm-hmm.
The Orville felt like exactly what I was looking for, you know? And I wonder now if, you know, this is going to be a very strange connection, but if you ever see the movie First Night with Richard Gere and Sean Connery.
Yeah, I've seen it. As a kid, I think. So it's a long time ago.
The first time I saw that movie, I wanted a King Arthur story, and I was horribly disappointed because it's not in any way, shape, or form true to the King Arthur myth. About a couple years later, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this as a movie about one knight who's in love with a woman who's married to another knight. And in that regard, it's a perfectly fine movie. In the same way, I recently rewatched the Disney movie Hercules, utterly divorcing myself from any connection it might have to Greek mythology. I was able to enjoy it a lot more. I kind of think now, especially now that with you, I'm rewatching Orville and getting that itch scratched so well. I think I'm probably going to give Discovery another chance, because I think if I'm able to approach it as an interesting science fiction show that has characters I sort of remember but is not connected to Star Trek in any way, I'd probably enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, I think you would. I really do. I bristled real hard against it the first watch as well, but we did a rewatch because we heard about the Picard show starting, so we started the Star Trek Universe podcast, and we did a rewatch of the entire thing, kind of knowing where it was going, and those first few episodes, now that I knew where the show was going, was a lot more palatable, and
right.
Knowing the kind of show it was, and also, I will say, you just have to forgive it the first two episodes, I think. The first two episodes,
yeah.
I think, are bad. Like, I think they're actively bad.
Oh, and there you and I disagree, because I actually loved the two prologue episodes. I really liked.
Oh, see, that's... I did not. I did not at all.
For me, more than anything, it's the Klingons. What I think, if I start watching it, I'll have to just, like, load up some of the best Klingon episodes from DS9 and Next Generation, just to, like, get that fix, because I hate how they do the Klingons so much.
Interesting. Yeah, not to keep going deeper, but yeah, they do make some changes as the show goes on to bring them more in line with the traditional Klingons.
Okay,
for sure.
That definitely catches my interest.
Well, I'll give you one thing, because it's not a spoiler by plot in any way. You know how they're all bald and it makes them look really strange?
Uh-huh.
It turns out in season two they mention it. In season two they all get hair again. And it turns out that this culture at this time of Klingons, they shave their head when they're at war. And so... Okay. They look really strange, but it's really weird, even though they still have the double nostril thing, which is weird. Once they get hair, they start looking a lot like Klingons.
Yeah, that sounds a little better. It definitely sounds also like a writer was like, oh boy, people really don't like this. We've got to change it somewhat.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Season 2 did a bunch of, almost to a ridiculous degree, they went through and like made changes to make the fans... Like, to bring it in line with canon, just to make the fans like, okay, like, it's kind of a silly thing you did there, but I appreciate that you're trying.
Yeah, generally I don't like fan service, but in this case it sounds like it's very needed, so.
The reason I love Star Trek, and growing up on it, and one of my major things I love about it is the deep continuity. And
yeah.
It's why I don't think they should have created a prequel to begin with. Like, why do we have to set a show in a era where we already know how everything should look and feel, and then you're going to give us a show and make it look and feel drastically different? That's the first mistake. And then they just made so many changes. So, yeah, it makes me mad. Because then, or just tell me it's in a different universe, and then, like, tell me it's in the J.J. Abrams timeline, and then maybe I could be fine with it, or something. But,
yeah,
you know, this sort of mushy middle ground where they're like, they want to keep all the prime timeline fans around, so they just tell us it's in the same timeline, but make tons of changes. It pisses me off. It feels exploitative.
Now, I'm with you there, but let's pull it back to our original show.
Yeah, let's talk about the Orville a little bit more.
Dave is going to get mad because I'm not actually part of the Star Trek universe podcast yet.
Oh, come on. It's the Orville universe podcast. It's basically the Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But yeah, let's kind of wrap up. So do you have any kind of final thoughts or things you wanted to touch on?
Really? I don't think we mentioned Bordas eating everything. We talked about it before the cast, but I know that's a small joke, but I just like the world building of the different species. Obviously, the Krill were very focused on, the fact that they're space vampires, apparently, which was a really funny line.
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting thing. The fact that they're light sensitive. And Bordas eating everything, like, it's just two interesting traits of these species that we didn't know before. Thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I definitely like that, especially with regard to Babylon 5 was a show that I always really liked. It has a lot of problems, but it did a lot more than Star Trek to sort of say, we can't assume that all aliens would want the same basic living conditions that we would, and to explore that some more.
Yeah.
So I loved that with the vampires. And I just liked with Bordas, like, yes, people would find these differences fascinating and scientists would want to study them, but then people like Malloy would just want to, like, see what crazy things you could dress, you know, make them eat. And I just love that as well.
I love how human Malloy is.
Mm-hmm.
How silly he is. I mean, in many ways, I feel like he is a representation of the sort of Family Guy humor on the show.
Yeah.
Which is okay with me, because it's one character who has that sense of humor, who loves to, like, make jokes. And coming from him, he can make way sillier jokes than most of the other characters and get away with it, you know?
Yeah. I think it's definitely true.
Love that. And him, again, I really like Malloy this episode, but another two things I liked about him was I really liked the line, "That's my brand new leg." That's a brand new leg. Again, just great continuity. He lost his leg last episode and had to have it regenerated, and this time he gets stabbed and he goes, "That's a brand new leg."
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
There's a lot of little of that continuity, or, you know, that I'm the show is still fairly episodic, and I don't actually mind that. I like episodic to some extent.
Yeah.
But it's episodic that feels like it's still not serialized. It's episodic, but that it's still serialized in that it doesn't feel like every episode goes back to zero, you know? What happens in one episode carries over to the next one.
Yeah, and characters can change, and that's the important part to me. That's mm-hmm. why DS9 is my favorite Star Trek, because characters change over time.
Yeah.
And that's really important these days. Like, you can still have episodic television and all of the great things that come with that. Being able to tell a new story every week and being able to hook in a new viewer every week that hasn't seen all the other episodes. But you need the character movement, even if it's slow, throughout the series. And I love that they're doing that. Yeah. The only other last thing was, I just thought, I felt real bad for Malloy. My girlfriend's a ginger. you're a ginger as well, correct?
I am.
Yeah, that sunburn was something fierce at the end.
Yeah, I just got back from a week vacation with my now fiance's family.
Congratulations! I can't believe we didn't say it before now. I'm sorry. Congratulations!
But we were up at some cabins up in northern Minnesota with them, and I spent a lot of time putting a lot of sunblock on.
I bet.
I burn easy.
So, unrelated to science fiction, it feels like science fiction. My girlfriend, and she would not want me to tell you this because she thinks it's hoodoo, but it works. She got sunscreen pills.
Hmm.
I forget what they're called. I'll try to send you a link. She got these sunscreen pills.
Okay.
And when she's used them, she's never gotten burnt. It's real weird. And she normally uses them in conjunction with sunscreen, but, like, she normally gets burnt anyway because she's so fair-skinned.
Right.
But these sunscreen pills, we don't understand how they work. And she's such a science kid that she feels like it's not true. And she hates when I tell people about them because she's like, it's got to be fake. But they work. They work for her. And it's weird. It's real strange.
Yeah, I'm going to say I have some nervousness there just because – if I try them and they don't work, that's very, very bad.
Oh yeah, I would not use them without sunscreen.
Yeah.
As well. You know.
But all right. Well, given that we have now gone on two fairly lengthy diatribes outside of Orville, I think it's about time to wrap this up.
Oh yeah. Well, man, thanks for doing the cast. This is fun.
Yeah, thank you. This is like I said, I'm getting that Star Trek itch scratched again by watching this all. So I'm enjoying it, and I hope our listeners are. And I really hope listeners like. I mean, Matt and I are scoping out a lot of opinions and a lot of perspectives and a lot of things that folks may not agree with. So please write in. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you don't think. I'm loving talking to you about it, but I would really love to start hearing from some of our listeners and what they think.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're doing this pretty much week to week. We're recording them as we go. So if you are watching a little ahead of where we are, feel free to send us feedback about the specific episodes, because then we can actually have a different perspective on those episodes. So, yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Peace.
And just remember, in space, your rental car is always right on time.
Thanks for listening to the Orville Universe podcast. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Westfox, search your podcatcher now for the Superhero Ethics podcast. If you'd like to hear more from me, Matthew Carroll, search your podcatcher for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast and the Star Trek Universe podcast. Or you can check out my music. Just search for Matthew Carroll wherever you listen to music.